Welcome to the conference call of TAG Immobilien AG, which is now starting. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. May I now hand you over to Mr. Martin Thiel?
Yeah, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. This is Martin from TAG here in Hamburg. Welcome to our conference call for the Q4 and full year figures 2017. I think, generally speaking, we can present to you a very nice and good set of results today. I'm sure you have seen already the press release we issued this morning. We've beaten our FFO guidance for 2017. We have increased our dividend guidance for the year 2017. We have a strong valuation result. So all in all, I think a nice set of results this morning. And perhaps let's start with the highlights on slide number 4. First of all, starting with the last results from the fourth quarter, and then perhaps after that, a quick look for the full year financial 2017 and the highlights there. So I'm starting on slide 4 with a look on the operational performance. The vacancy in the residential units was down to 4.8% at the year-end 2017. I think this is definitely a strong development, especially a last strong quarter. When you look to the right side, you see at the end of the third quarter, we had 5.3% vacancy, so 50 basis points vacancy reduction just in the fourth quarter. That brings us in the residential units on a like-for-like basis below the 5% threshold for the first time, and a 130 basis point reduction in the full year 2017, definitely a good result. The like-for-like rental growth, the basis like-for-like rental growth without effects from vacancy reduction, remain nearly unchanged at 2%. The total like-for-like rental growth, including the effects from vacancy reduction, came out at 3.1% in the full year 2017. That compares to 3.7% in the financial year 2016. The difference is that we, in the last year, had a somewhat higher effect from vacancy reduction. Underlying like-for-like rental growth, as I said, basis is nearly unchanged. The FFO1 came out at 127.4 million in comparison to 97 million in the financial year 2016, a strong increase, which was already clear, but especially the last quarter was again very strong. You see in the fourth quarter 2017, we had an FFO of 34.1 million. That was even a little bit more than in the third quarter, 33.9 million. So and therefore, because of this last strong two quarters, we strongly beat our guidance of FFO, which was around 120 million. And also on a per share basis, strong increase, 87 cent per share FFO1 in 2017 after 72 cent in the prior year. But not only the FFO showed a strong development in the last quarter or in the financial year 2017, also NAV and LTV developed both in the right direction, which means that the NAV strongly increased to 13.80 euro per share on the back of strong valuation gains. We will come back to the valuation results in, later on. And correspondingly, the LTV was reduced from 57% in September 2017 to 52.3% in December 2017, not only because of the valuation gain, we had also a disposal in Freiburg, which we already communicated in August, I think, which closed in the fourth quarter. But of course, the valuation result in the fourth quarter helped us to reduce the LTV now down to 52%. Looking at acquisitions and disposals, today we can announce another acquisition that we signed in November 2017. Closing was already at year end, so in December 2017 in Gotha, in Thuringia, an already existing TAG location where we were very happy to buy another nearly 500 units at an attractive acquisition multiple of 11.7 times the current rent. And current rent in this case means that it includes or bases on a vacancy rate of nearly 23%. So this, of course, offers significant upside potential. Portfolio sales, a smaller sale of 265 units in Halle an der Saale. This was a sale of non-core assets. And these assets were included in an acquisition that we made in June this year. So out of the approximately 1,500 units that we acquired in June this year and that we already announced, we already passed over 265 non-core residential units to another party. Reason for that was the construction quality where we said, okay, that's not something that is really from a strategic perspective, something we want to keep. Perhaps similarly to a transaction you know from us, from the beginning of the year where we sold 500 units in Brandenburg an der Havel included in an acquisition. So from the location-wise, it was okay, but construction quality was not on a standard. We said if that makes sense for us. Ongoing disposals amounted to more than 400 units all in all. You know that from us, that's a kind of recurring cash flow that includes privatization, that includes also the disposals of smaller portfolios, 10, 15, 20 units, for example, to private investors. That's it from the fourth quarter. And then on the next page, Pep, it's an overview on financial year 2017. First of all, I mean, we have clearly strong increases in FFO, AFFO, and dividend. FFO 1 up by 31% and on a per-share basis by more than 20%. And the AFFO developed extremely strong by nearly 70% on absolute amounts and nearly 60% on a per-share basis. We will come to the AFFO development a little bit later on, but I think this is important to point out that the AFFO extremely strong had an extremely strong development. Of course, on the back of a strong FFO development and on the back of a still moderate capex policy we are driving, which makes sense from our point of view. We can increase the dividend guidance for the financial year 2017 today. We're keeping our dividend policy of distributing 75% of FFO1 to our shareholders, and on the back of an increased FFO1 per share, this now corresponds into 65 cent per share dividend for the financial year 2017. The prior guidance was at 62 cent. So year on year compared with the dividend we paid this year, this is a more than 14% increase. The EPRA NAV and LTV, I already mentioned, saw significant improvements in 2017. If you exclude the dividend payment we made this year to our shareholders, that's a total growth in NAV per share of 44% now to 13.80, coming from, on a comparable basis, a little bit less than 10 euros at the beginning of the year, I think a strong development. And also the LTV goes into the right direction, now down to 52%. We also continued our capital recycling strategy in 2017, and this is, of course, something you should expect to continue in 2018-2019. So all in all, we acquired 5,000 units at a 8.2% gross yield. On the other side, we sold 2,000 units at an average gross yield of 5.3%. Not only the non-core sales I already mentioned, especially sales in high-priced markets. You already know them in Freiburg and Breisgau and in Berlin. So looking at the net number or looking at the overall effect, it's possible that we finance nearly the complete acquisitions with this disposal in stronger markets and, of course, increase by selling in high-priced markets and buying at attractive multiples our rent correspondingly. Refinancing was another topic in 2017, which was important for our figures. A total of 634 million of bank loans were refinanced in 2017. We had an issuance of a new convertible bond. We bought back, at least partially, a corporate bond, 160 million in September, and now a little bit less than 3 million in December 2017 via the market at exactly the same purchase price. The remaining part will be now paid back in August 2018 when the maturity of the bond is there. And this brought our average cost of debt down from 3.15% at the beginning of the year to now 2.34% in December. And if you eliminate on a pro forma basis the corporate bond that is maturing this year in 2018 in August, which is basically already refinanced, the average cost of down is already down at 2.1%. So this shows you in which direction the average cost of debt is going. That's it from the highlight, and then perhaps go a little bit more into details of the P&L, and I'm now on slide number 7. If you look at the developments here, rental income sharply increased. First of all, clear because of our new acquisitions, 5,000 units we already signed this year, and the closing of these units was to a large part in the second half, so we will have the full effect now in 2018. Total like-for-like rental growth, I already mentioned, at an attractive more than 3%. Perhaps even more interesting, the development of net rental income. Yes, on the one side, we had somehow higher maintenance expenses of approximately 4 million, but on the other side, because of these new acquisitions, we had the chance to integrate them very efficiently into our platform, and that led to cost savings if you look at the margin. And, of course, we have cost savings from our now, for the first time, below 5% vacancy rate. So the service charge leakage, of course, was reduced very, very strongly. This led then all in all to net rental income of 235 million in comparison to 290 million in the prior year. Then looking at net revenue from services, and perhaps to mention here, for the first time now we are presenting this net revenue from services in a separate line. Before the time, perhaps you remember the discussion we had with the release of the Q3 figures, this net revenue from services were on the one side included in other operating income and on the other side included in expenses from property management. But as this business is becoming more and more important, I think it's right and correct to show this in a separate line. Net revenue means, in this case, net revenue before personal expenses, before other operating expenses from the services, or before net financial result. So if you look at the net revenue, it nearly doubled from 7 million to 15 million. And if you look in the, at the FFO impact, that's more than 4 million for the financial year 2017. We give you all the details in the appendix on slide 32. You know the detailed presentation we had at the third quarter. You will find that in the same manner in the appendix. But once again, the FFO impact from the total service business was more than 4 million. That was even a little bit more than we expected in regard to, in comparison to the guidance that stood at an FFO impact of approximately 3.3 million. Valuation results, our dimension was very strong, 293 million in a net effect compared to 160 million in the prior year. We'll come back to that a little bit later. Other operating expenses increased from 18 million to 25 million. The reason and the only reason for the effect was a one-off we had in this year, which is also in the FFO bridge, the only one-off we are presenting. We had to make a provision of 8.5 million for real estate transfer risks from prior years. And what's the background there? In January this year, we saw a new decision from the highest financial court in Germany, the Bundesfinanzhof, regarding REST structures or REST blocker structures used in the financial years 2011 and 2012. Today it's uncertain what are the consequences from this judgment. Definitely we have no tax assessment in our house and we have no concrete reactions from the authorities. But when we look at this judgment, we thought it's appropriate to make a provision of 8.5 million. And this was the main reason for this increase in other operating expenses. The net financial result improved from 89 million to 82 million. Looking at the net financial result cash after one-offs, which is then the appropriate number for the FFO calculation, it improved by nearly 9 million year on year. Looking at income taxes, still the very large part of our income taxes is deferred taxes. Looking at the cash taxes, these came out at 3.1 million in 2017 compared to 1.7 million in 2016. So still a very moderate and effective tax rate we have, which was even a little bit less than what we planned in for the financial year 2017. Then I'm on the next slide at the development of EBITDA, FFO and AFFO. Starting with the EBITDA, we had a strong improvement in the EBITDA and also in the EBITDA margin, which is perhaps even more important. The EBITDA margin improved by nearly 400 basis points in comparison to 2016, of course, because of the higher net rental income we had, but also the net revenue from services contributed a lot to this strong improvement in the EBITDA margin. I already mentioned the development in FFO, and here on slide number 8, you see again the strong development we had in AFFO. We present to you here two figures, AFFO before modernization capex and AFFO after all capex. This number after all capex is the number we're using, so when we talk about AFFO, that's after the full deduction of capex. And this AFFO came out at nearly 85 million and will continuously increase further on in 2018 and 2019, not only because of the operational improvements, but also the financing cost will definitely improve in 2018 and 2019 further on. So you should expect even stronger AFFO growth in the next 1 or 2 years. Perhaps just one comment on the FFO2. If you look at that number, you see FFO2 in this year equals exactly the FFO1, so net revenue from sales was at zero, but this is more a technical issue. If you look at the details on our disposals that we show you on slide number 20, you will see that in fact we had more than 60 million of book profits from our disposals. But more from a technical side, we had the situation that when we sold the portfolio, for example, in June, and the closing of the portfolio was in later quarters, we had to revalue after we signed the portfolio and the book value to the purchase price. So that means technically the 16.1 million moved from the book profits of disposals to the valuation gain. So therefore, economically, this FFO2 is 16.1 million higher. That's the comment we want to make here. And the net revenue from sales at zero is more a technical aspect. Then I'm on the next slide, slide number 9, balance sheet. And perhaps two things important to mention. First of all, we have still a strong cash position from the issuance of the convertible bond. We have another net cash proceed from disposals. This was a sale in Freiburg of 40 million in the fourth quarter. We repaid ahead of maturity some short-term bank loans because of our strong cash position. And this cash position, even after the repayment of the dividend, the corporate bond and the payment of the dividend, gives us enough flexibility to acquire further on in 2018. So I would say currently the firepower we have should be enough for perhaps similar transaction sizes than what we had in 2017. On slide number 9, we also present to you the change in LTV, which was reduced by nearly 500 basis points. Clear, a large part of it was due to the portfolio valuation, but also the placement of treasury shares helped us. And it's clear we have ongoing results and ongoing amortization of bank loans that continuously reduces our LTV to now a little bit more than 52% at the end of the year. On the next slide, slide number 10, a quick look at the NAV bridge. I already mentioned that we had a 44% growth in NAV per share in 2017, excluding the dividend payment, and the main driver was the portfolio valuation this year, which was, of course, very positive. So I think this shows clearly the trend. Clearly, what we see in the market is now coming through regarding the portfolio valuation and the strong increase to nearly 14 euros per share in NAV. Then slide number 11, another summary of cost of debt and LTV. As I already said, average cost of debt down to 2.3%. And if you take into account on a pro forma basis the already refinanced corporate bond and eliminate debt from the cost of debt, we're down at 2.1%. And when I look now in the upcoming maturities in the next 1 or 2 years, I think that we will go to the 2% or even a little bit lower cost of debt that's perhaps already in the cards. So in 2018 and 2019, should expect another reduction of the average cost of debt. LTV down, as I said, to 52%, and in line with what we communicated to you in the last quarters, now we have a new LTV target of approximately 50%. You know, before that time, we had it at 55% and said always, well, depending on the outcome of valuations, we see more LTV target of 50 to 55%. And now, as we saw this valuation gain, we think it's very consistent to say, okay, this strongly points into the direction of 50%. So this is the new LTV target, and we estimated we will reach this LTV target clearly within the financial year 2018. Not only on the back of valuation gains we expect also for 2018, but also because of our ongoing results and because of a disposal in Berlin that we already signed, where we expect the closing to take place in the course of the first quarter. If you look at the average financial debt per square meter and the LTV of this 52%, based on a fair value per square meter of 845 million, translates into an average financial debt per square meter of 440 euros. So that shows you that this is definitely not an aggressive debt structure. Debt structure is also the thing I want to look at with you on slide number 12. You see the maturity profile on the top left. Perhaps just important to mention that we extended the maturities also in 2017, so there was not only a reduction in cost of debt, we also now have higher or longer maturities in our financial debt. And if we look at the total financial debt maturity, we're at 8.6% coming from 8.3%, 8.6 years coming from 8.3 years in the prior year. So this shows you that we're going here in the longer duration. And perhaps also worth to mention, I mean, we did a lot of refinancing in 2017, nearly 1 billion. We refinanced 630 million of bank loans and effectively the full corporate bond of 310 million, but there's still potential left. We showed it to you on the left side in the fourth bullet points that we have ongoing refinancing of smaller bank loans maturing or with interest terms ending in the next 3 years of approximately 100 million per annum. And if you look at the average coupon of this bank loans, we are in many cases north of 3%, so they should lead to further interest cost savings. And then in 2020, we have one corporate bond maturing of 125 million with an interest coupon of 3.75%, so they should lead definitely to additional interest cost savings. Then on slide number 14, the portfolio overview. Looking at the total number of units, we increased the number of units on a net basis by 3,000 units, 5,000 units newly acquired, 2,000 units sold, that leads to the 83,000. Vacancy in the total portfolio is now below 6%, so 5.8%, and vacancy in residential units, and residential units means without commercial units and without new acquisitions from this year at 4.8%. The vacancy reduction is also shown on slide number 15, the vacancy reduction in the last 3 years. And if we look at the development, I think we have definitely strong years, 2015, 2016, and 2017. So reductions, 150 basis points in 2015, 160 basis points in 2016, and 130 basis points in 2017, thereof an effect of 20 basis points from a disposal we did in Brandenburg and a half, a disposal with higher vacancy rates. So the 130 basis points reduction in 2017 consists of this 20 basis points effect from disposals, but, and I think this is a strong sign, 100 basis points from the existing portfolio, which of course then creates attractive cash flows from us from further rental growth and from cost savings. Remember what I said just 1 minute before, that the service charge leakage now was reduced in 2017 further on. On the next slide, we have for you the presentation of like-for-like rental growth. The basis like-for-like rental growth still stands at 2%, and I think important to mention this 2% basis like-for-like rental growth is just with a very small CapEx impact. So it's nearly completely from ongoing rent increases for existing tenants and from tenant turnover. So the CapEx impact from CapEx program for existing tenants is perhaps something around 10 basis points. And if you include the effect from vacancy reduction into the like-for-like rental growth and arrive at total like-for-like rental growth, we are still north of 3%. And that's important to look at it correspondingly. The total investments we need for like-for-like rental growth in total of more than 3% is still less than 16 euros per square meter. So we're still constant at around 15 euros 50 per square meter maintenance and CapEx together. And I think this is important to point out again. We don't need extensive modernization programs for existing tenants to achieve an attractive like-for-like rental growth. And of course, this is an important driver for our AFFO. And we don't expect this trend to change in 2018 and 2019. Perhaps you should assume a little bit more CapEx and maintenance for next year. But then we're talking more about maintenance and CapEx in the direction to 16, perhaps a little bit more euros per square meter, and no plans to invest heavily to achieve like-for-like rental growth. Here we have the good situation that we have still a lot of potential from our existing vacancy and from the vacancy that we acquired in 2017. Sorry. Then on slide 17, we are at the valuation slide. Well, it was always clear that our valuation was definitely conservative, and I would say it is still conservative, but important is the trend we see. If you look at the key metrics on the right side, we're coming from 740 euros per square meter at the beginning of the year on a comparable basis. Then we had 800 euros per square meter in the June valuation, and now we did the year-end valuation together with CBRE. So the result was 845 euros per square meter. This is still moderate and still offers upside potential. Gross yield stands at 7.1%. So therefore, I mean, it's hard to give you today a concrete guidance for 2018. And of course, the valuation result in 2017 was extremely strong. But that generally the trend will continue, and that means with trend, I mean that we see yield compression in our markets and that we see increasing our price in the prices in our markets, and I'm definitely sure that will continue in 2018. So for the first time, the largest part of our valuation gain is coming from yield compression. This is approximately 75% of the total valuation gain. You see this in the bullet points on the left side. And approximately 25% is a gain from stronger rental growth and vacancy reduction than expected in the last valuation. But in absolute terms, also this gain from stronger rental growth increased. This was 138 million this year compared with 93 million. So therefore, yes, it's true, we have a higher gain from yield compression, which is then good news for the market, but also I think important to point out that the underlying fundamentals are improving. That means we have higher rents, we have reduced vacancy, and therefore from this area we get also stronger and stronger valuation gains. Then on slide 19, perhaps a look at the acquisitions for the financial year 2017. I already said that new is one acquisition that we signed in November in Gotha in Thuringia, a city of approximately 50,000 people, quite near to the capital of Thuringia, Erfurt, where we were happy to buy 480 units with a 22% vacancy at a multiple of 11.7 times the current rent, including the vacancy. So this should definitely fit into our existing structure and offer upside potential for vacancy reduction. So in total, 5,000 units acquired at an average vacancy rate of nearly 14%, at an 8% gross yield. This is definitely, I think, a good acquisition volume for 2017. Looking into the pipeline for 2018, it's difficult to give concrete guidance on acquisitions, but I think, first of all, clearly our markets are competitive too, but in our markets, the chance to get perhaps in a similar size in 2018 seems at least better than in markets like Berlin, Hamburg, or Munich, where we have even higher competition. So therefore, we are optimistic that we can get perhaps in similar sizes in 2018 with our acquisition policy. And then on slide 20, looking at the disposals in 2017, I already mentioned the new disposal or the disposal we're communicating today in Halle an der Saale. But looking at the total numbers, we sold 2,000 units last year that released nearly 100 million of cash at an average multiple of nearly 19 times the current rent, and especially disposals in high-priced markets like Freiburg or like Berlin allow us to a very large extent to finance new acquisitions, and that's also something they should expect from us for the financial year 2018 and 2019. And then a final look at slide 22, again at the results for 2017 and the guidance for 2018. As I said, FFO was approximately 6% above the guidance that we already increased twice this year. And if you compare this 127 million of FFO result with the guidance that we released in August 2017, the main difference is that we in August expected somewhat higher maintenance costs, a bit more than 3 million, that we expected somehow higher financing costs. The difference was approximately 1.9 million. And also some other things I already mentioned, the service business contributed better to the FFO than we expected. The dividend per share forecast is increased today from 62 cents to 65 cents. This corresponds into 75% payout ratio of FFO, and in comparison to last year, this is a 14% increase, and that translates based on today's share price of a dividend yield of approximately 4.3%, which is definitely attractive. Looking at the guidance for the financial year 2018, we keep the guidance today unchanged, but we will review it during the course of the first or second quarter. It's clear on the back of the strong results we achieved today or we achieved in the financial year 2017, the guidance for 2018 looks conservative and looks absolutely achievable, but perhaps a little bit too early to increase the guidance for 2018 today. We need a little bit more visibility on acquisitions and disposals, and we'll come back to you with the review of the guidance, whether it is after the Q1 results or the Q2 results, that's not yet decided, but just as a general comment, I think the guidance for 2018 is more on the conservative side with 135 million FFO and a dividend of 70 cents per share. Well, thank you so far for listening. That's it from me, from an overview of our full year results. And now, of course, I'm happy to take your questions.
Yeah, thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone telephone. The operator will announce your name when it's your turn to ask a question. In case you wish to cancel your question, please press star 2. For your questions, please press star 1 now. The first question here is Mr. Mikhail Tonchev from Kempen. May we have your questions, please?
Position in Gotha Thuringia. Can you give a little bit of color on the appeal of this market and perhaps just a longer term discussion visibility on where your next sort of vacancy reduction cluster will appear? Is it going to be more smaller cities around core provincial capital cities, or are you looking to enter a new cluster? Because that's been a very lucrative sort of cash return on equity proposition for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael, for the question. First of all, looking at the Gotha market, to give a little bit more color of that, we already acquired a portfolio in Gotha in the financial year, I think about 2016, where the vacancy rate in that portfolio was already nearly down at 0 or 1%. So we know generally that this market in Gotha, which is on the first side a smaller city of, as I said, 50,000 units, is in very good shape. It's not too far away. It takes you approximately 30 minutes with a car from the capital of Thuringia, which is Erfurt, where we have in our portfolio in Erfurt, in the meanwhile, a vacancy rate below 2%, sort of 1.7%. So therefore, we're very happy that we had the chance to acquire a portfolio with another vacancy reduction potential there in Gotha. And then looking at the let's say the areas or the regions where we see a lot of vacancy reduction potential, well, I think on slide 24 of the presentation in the appendix, we give you some details on existing vacancy rates in the portfolio. Looking, for example, at the Salzgitter region, we are already down at almost 5% vacancy rate. And it's clear from there on the next steps are perhaps quite moderate, but the success was really very strong in the last year in Salzgitter. But we have some other regions, like, for example, Chemnitz, still with nearly 10% vacancy rate, coming from more than 13% at the beginning of the year, where we see a lot of potential. Or also in the Berlin region, which is in our case the Berlin commuter belts, for example, Brandenburg an der Havel, or Nauen, or Strausberg, or Eberswalde, so all smaller cities or medium-sized cities with a good train connection, a good connection to Berlin, still a vacancy rate of nearly 5%. So there is definitely potential. Perhaps it's moving a little bit, if you want, so from the former concentration on Salzgitter now to regions like, for example, Chemnitz, where we definitely see potential.
Thank you. If I may, just to follow up, on Leipzig, we saw like-for-like rental growth at 1.1%. It's obviously a very attractive market on many levels. Is this just a function of the rent tables, or is there anything else?
Yeah, first of all that, and then secondly, I mean, we have already also a lot in the commuter belts around Leipzig, so therefore you perhaps kind of compare this directly to the rental growth we saw in Leipzig in the city, but clearly we expected this total or like-for-like rental growth number or even the basis like-for-like rental growth number in Leipzig will increase in the future.
Thank you very much for taking my questions.
Yeah, thanks.
Our next question is Mr. Georg Kanders from Bankhaus Lampe. Mr. Kanders, may we have your questions, please?
Yeah, regarding your... good morning, first. Regarding your acquisition potential, you see, you're talking about the same as last year. Does it mean you think it's possible that you acquire a gross amount of 5,000 units in the current year? And are there some negotiations where you are more advanced?
Yeah, good morning, Georg. First of all, it's, to make it very clear, we can't promise anything today. It's more a general comment that we think the markets clearly are competitive, but if you look at the portfolios we are buying, that means portfolios in medium-sized cities in Eastern Germany, portfolios with higher vacancy rates, portfolio where you have perhaps not on day one a strong valuation gain, but on the other hand, on day one a strong cash flow. That's something that is perhaps not on everyone's agenda, and therefore we think that the chance of acquiring new portfolios in this region is higher. And then how concrete is this? Well, of course, we are all the time in negotiations. I can't say that we have now anything that will communicate extremely quick to the market, but perhaps it takes some time for this year until we communicate anything. So just more a general trend that, or general comment that I think that perhaps a comparable acquisition volume is realistic, but still to remind you, this is not an official acquisition target of 5,000 units.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
Questions comes from Mr. Thomas Neuhold from Kepler Cheuvreux. Mr. Neuhold, may we have your questions, please?
Yes, good morning. I would like to address three topics. Firstly, on the outlook for maintenance modernization spending into 2018, we've seen quite a strong decrease in vacancy rates across the portfolio in the last 2 to 3 years. Will that impact your modernization and maintenance spending going forward? Then the second question would be, we have seen very good revaluation gains basically across the board. What would you say in your key regions of presence, where do you see the biggest potential for further revaluation gains in 18 and 19? And the last question is on the proposed regulatory changes by the new government. Will there be any impact on your business from that? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Thomas, for the questions. First question, looking at the outlook and looking in perhaps 2018, 2019, what is our maintenance and CapEx policy? Well, it's clear that we have strongly reduced the vacancy, but on the other side, we already also acquired new portfolios with higher vacancy rates. So therefore, you should assume that the general maintenance and CapEx policy will continue. So we had a total investment of 15 to 16 euros per square meter in the last 3 years. You should expect that a similar number, whether it's 1 euro more or less, is absolutely realistic for the financial year 2018, and as we see it also for the financial year 2019. Perhaps to some extent we are here a little bit against the trend, and even in the case that we see that the vacancy is going more and more down, and even just thinking theoretically that we have no new acquisitions with higher vacancy rates, we think that in many cases, large CapEx programs for our shareholders do not really deliver that attractive returns, perhaps attractive yield and costs, but the question is always, do you really on the mid to long term achieve attractive cash returns with longer, with higher CapEx programs beside an improvement of FFO, beside an improvement of like-for-like rental growth? So mostly looking at it from a cash basis, it's, I would say it like this, in some cases really questionable, if this makes sense. So definitely we will stay on the same policy as it is today. Mm-hmm. Looking at revaluations, on slide 26 of the presentation in the appendix, we give you the details from the valuations in the different regions, and looking at the implied multiples after the valuation now in 2017, for example, a region I already mentioned, the Chemnitz region or the city of Chemnitz, is still very moderate at 11.9 times the current rent, and current rent in this case means based on the vacancy rate, which is nearly 10% we have on the Chemnitz region. So this is definitely a region that we further expect to improve, as well as the Berlin region, which has, of course, a higher implied multiple, now at nearly 16 times rent. But what we see in the Berlin region is a very strong development. And as I said, the Berlin region, in our case, is more the commuter belt. And interestingly, the like-for-like rental growth in our Berlin portfolio around the city, so not in the city, had a 3.8% like-for-like rental growth. And that's without large cash CapEx programs, just from ongoing rent increases and just from tenant turnover. So we see that we can clearly observe here spillover effects from the city into the commuter belt with a like-for-like rental growth of 3.8% in the Berlin area. Mm-hmm. And the last question was regulatory changes. Well, still we have not extreme visibility on the final results of the new government, but I think what is definitely likely to come is the reduction in the modernization surcharge from 11% to 8%. Yes, of course, this is something we have to follow and have to consider, but I was just talking about our modernization policy, and as you know that we're doing this definitely not extensively, this should definitely not hit us. The other thing one has to look at a little bit more closely is what will happen to the rent tables. So far, what we hear from the discussions, that's still not really concrete. When the new government says they will review the rent tables and will think about perhaps longer time periods when to publish the rent tables and to get them more appropriate, accurate, whatever that means. So yes, this could be something for the whole sector. But again, in our business model, as we're not addicted to rent table increases in, for example, very large cities, betting on that, that's perhaps nothing for us to be a real concern. But of course, we have to closely look at the final outcome.
Okay. Thank you very much.
So next is Mr. Bernd Jansen from Victoria Partners. Mr. Jansen, your line is open for your questions.
Yeah, good morning. Two remaining questions, one on like-for-like rental growth for 2018 and the other one on capital recycling. I understand from your comments that for 2018, again, something like 2% like-for-like rental growth, excluding a change in vacancy, would be a good assumption. I'll probably ask the other question after your comment.
Yeah, good morning, Ben. Yeah, this is absolutely a good assumption. So what we have as an underlying assumption, our business plan for 2018, is a basic like-for-like rental growth of exactly 2%.
And any change in composition, meaning between increase among sitting tenants and tenant turnover compared to 2017? I don't have the kind of the upcoming rent table adjustments in mind for this year.
Yeah, no, not really. That's basically stable, and especially stable, perhaps to mention this again, is that we still have just the impact of approximately 10 basis points from CapEx for existing tenants. Mm-hmm. But the split between regular rent increases for existing tenants and reletting process is still unchanged, and that's currently approximately 1.1%, a little bit more for existing tenants, and then between 17 to 80 basis points from tenant turnover.
Mm. Okay, that's in line with our expectations. Second question on disposals, or call it capital recycling, and I'm looking at page 26. I mean, I assume within the implied December 2017 implied rent multiples, there are some clusters with higher multiples. So could you give us a rough indication of where you would potentially see additional disposal opportunities? You mentioned already the Berlin signed transaction for the first quarter 2018.
Yeah. Well, it's clear when we think about disposals, what first of all continue is if we see non-core assets, for example, from acquisitions, we'll sell that. We will also continue with ongoing disposals, but as I said, you should also expect targeted sales in high-priced markets, and high-priced markets are perhaps more and more cities also like Dresden and Leipzig, where we see really strong increases in purchase price, and also cities like Hamburg has a strong development. So if you look at the implied multiples we present to you here on slide number 26, for example, the Hamburg multiple of 14.9 times on average the current rent is then a mixture of multiples in, I would say, the wider Hamburg region or in Schleswig-Holstein in Germany, and then multiples in Hamburg in the city, and multiples in Hamburg in the city are then perhaps more north of 25 times. Whereas, for example, in cities in Schleswig-Holstein or even the commuter belts in Hamburg, the implied valuation, implied multiple is more than 12 or 13 times the current rent. Mm-hmm. So clearly we will dispose further in stronger markets and take the cash we get out of the disposals and to reinvest it into new high-yielding properties.
And, well, that was precisely my assumption, that there are clusters in there that are already, based on to-date implied multiples, are closer or even north of 20, and then it might even be possible to sell them at a profit to fair values. So we should continue to assume that whenever you sell in what you describe as high price markets, that the multiple achieved should be definitely north of 20 and probably even closer towards 25.
Yeah, because just looking at the disposals for 2017, we had an average multiple of somewhat at 19 times, and that includes two larger non-core disposals in Brandenburg and in Halle.
Yeah, okay. All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Well, the next question comes from Mr. Thomas Rothäusler from Jefferies. Mr. Rothäusler, we have your questions, please.
Hi, good morning. I have a question actually on portfolio valuation. I look at page 26 of your presentation. I mean, especially in respect of valuation dynamics, if I go through the various clusters, then it seems like the clusters like Hamburg, Berlin, Dresden, they experienced the strongest uplift, but the clusters like Gera, Erfurt, Chemnitz, mainly the Eastern German clusters, were a bit lower. Is that a trend you have experienced, or especially in respect of outlook? Could we expect that the Eastern German locations might experience more upside in the future? I mean, so far it has been still rather low, I would say.
Yeah, first of all, thank you for the question. Looking, perhaps to start with the example you mentioned in Erfurt, at the implied multiple, you're absolutely correct that it goes from 13.8 times the current rent in 2016 to 14.1 times, so this seems to be a quite moderate increase and seems to be something like not really a large amount of yield compression. But on the other side, if you look at the total revaluation gain, you see that's quite substantial in Erfurt. And what we simply saw in Erfurt, that we had a very strong development, especially regarding also the vacancy reduction. Already mentioned that we are already in Erfurt, in the whole Erfurt region, below 2%. So that means we have a strong increase in rent, and that leads then to from a technical perspective, that we have a substantial valuation gain, but that the composition of yield compression and valuation gain from additional rent is perhaps not that as it is for example, Berlin portfolio, where we saw more the valuation gain coming from yield compression. But looking forward, I mean, at the end, a good development in rent and in vacancy will, of course, translate into yield compression. That's what we saw, or what we see now, where in the past, if you remember, that we had always good rent development, always good vacancy reduction, and moderate yield compression. And now more and more investors simply realize that the underlying fundamentals in East German markets are very healthy because of this operational development, and ask more and more for portfolios in Eastern Germany. So therefore, we think that yield compression will also kick in more and more, for example, in a region like Erfurt, or, as I already said, in a region like Chemnitz. Of course, we will definitely never see multiples like we see in the large cities like Berlin or Hamburg, is clear. But still, knowing that the basis we have here is moderate, that allows us or makes clear that we have potential for the future.
Maybe you can comment more on general dynamics in East Germany in respect of, especially in respect of migration trends. You know, is there still the trend that you get more people from rural areas into cities? And I mean, that started actually with Dresden, Leipzig, and the key cities. But is this broadening to smaller cities as well, or what's your experience in this respect?
Well, that's definitely the case. I'm just referring to the residential market report that we published in October in Eastern Germany. And I would say in general, I'm a little bit simplifying, but I think this is perhaps important. The trend of urbanization in Eastern Germany is, from our point of view, perhaps even a little bit stronger than in some parts of Western Germany. So that means the real rural areas in Eastern Germany, for example, in Mecklenburg-Vorpommern or in Brandenburg, are losing more and more people. And these people do not necessarily move only to Leipzig or Dresden. As I said, the commuter belts around Berlin, cities like Brandenburg and Havel, or commuter belts around Dresden and Leipzig are growing again. Or a city like Gotha, where we acquired another portfolio, is growing again. So therefore, we clearly see a trend of increasing population, not only in the top three or four cities in Eastern Germany, Dresden, Leipzig, Potsdam, and so on, but also in a city like, for example, Chemnitz.
Can you mention a couple of cities which you think benefit most from this kind of migration trends, you know?
Yeah, perhaps I think about attractive acquisition locations at the moment. Of course, we would be happy to buy in Chemnitz again. Of course, we would be happy to buy again in Halle an der Saale, what we did already twice last year. Because here we see on the one side positive underlying fundamentals and on the other side still attractive purchase prices. Whereas if you look at portfolio prices in Dresden or Leipzig in the city, I mean, of course, the fundamentals in the cities are definitely positive. But then the question is purchase prices not, with multiples north of 20 times for normal average quality really something that is worth going into the portfolios, or even if it's more than 225 times the current rent. So therefore, where we clearly should stay away from, not only Eastern Germany, but perhaps especially in Eastern Germany, is buying in very small cities without the influence of a medium-sized or larger cities around. But we think there are a lot of other cities besides Dresden and Leipzig that are attractive to invest.
And how about opportunities to invest there? I mean, in respect of market liquidity, I guess it's rather low.
I wouldn't say that. Perhaps for portfolio valuation purposes, you're right. I mean, the discussions we have frequently is, and we see transactions in the market above our valuation, then, of course, the question is this a sustainable transaction and is this a data point which is really valid? And in most cases, one data point is not enough, or perhaps two data points are not enough. So we need more and more evidence, and that's the reason why perhaps what happens in the market comes into the books, not directly in year one, but more in year two or three or four. But we clearly see transactions, and we are frequently competing for portfolios in these markets. So therefore, yes, there's liquidity, clearly not as much as you see in a market like Berlin, but yes, we have clearly transactions going on there.
Okay, thank you.
There are no more questionnaires at the moment. For any further questions, please press star 1 now. We got Mr. Kai Klose from Berenberg in the line. Mr. Klose, may we have your questions, please?
Yeah, good morning. I've got a question. You mentioned these tax provision, which you had to build up. Could you maybe provide a bit more color, what would be the worst and best case and when it's going to materialize? Second question, also on the portfolio, could you indicate what is the current fluctuation rate and what is the re-letting rent for an apartment where you typically don't need to spend a specific amount of capex and the last high amount of capex? And the last question is, could you indicate what is the annual debt amortization? What is the amount of annual debt amortization you're currently spending based on the current debt structure? Thank you.
Okay, Kai, thanks for the questions. I'll start perhaps with the last two ones. First of all, debt amortization, the absolute amount is around 55 million a year. I think this is approximately 2.5% of our bank debt that we'll be paying. So we're paying regular amortization on bank debt. That's approximately 55 million a year. But on the other side, always a new bank loan is maturing, we're able to increase when we sign a new contract, the amount for the new bank loan. So basically, this is often a kind of zero-sum game. So on the one side, we have debt amortization of 55 billion. On the other side, we have perhaps a nearly equal amount from refinancing maturing bank loans. The fluctuation rate in our portfolio is between 10 and 11%. That's nearly unchanged over the last 2 or 3 years. And in the reletting process, that of course is different from region to region, but normally we are between 7 and 10% above the prior year without any capex. That's a good estimate. And then regarding your question to the real estate transfer tax provision, well, for us, of course, it's difficult to predict when we have more color on that, whether it is in the next month or whether this takes 1 or 2 years. We have this judgment from the BFR, from the financial court in Germany, which is brand new now in January release, and we have to wait on the outcome. I think we feel comfortable with the 8.5 billion provision, but perhaps we can give you a little bit more color on the further developments with the conference calls in the remaining part of the year.
No problem. Many thanks indeed.
There are no more questions at the moment.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to our call. As always, if you have further questions, please contact our IR department or me directly. We're more than happy to answer it. Have a nice day and talk soon. Bye-bye.
We want to thank Mr. Thiel and all the participants of this conference call. Have a good day. Goodbye.